I'd like to do an overview of where we are with the Vima lawsuit briefly. As you all know, it was the topic of my talk Monday, August 31st, reason being that whenever we have a company that's being shot down by the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, and they filed a temporary restraining order against Vima on Monday, August 24th. So the next week I covered the Vima lawsuit because it kind of shakes, it causes shudders throughout the whole network marketing industry, direct sales industry. And so you can go back and listen to that call if you weren't able to be on it, but it would kind of step by step kind of went through, you know, what a TRO is, the substance of the lawsuit, the impact it could have on network marketing profession, and lessons that we learn from it as well, and then looking at how does Manatech compare to what transpired in the Vima lawsuit. So you could listen to that just to give you some feedback on it. But what happened is they had when they give you a TRO, a temporary restraining order, they froze all of Vima's assets. They basically shuttered the company. In other words, they couldn't ship any products. They couldn't tap into any of their bank accounts. None of their assets were available to corporate executives or the salespeople. So what happened is the whole, you know, it would be like if that happened to Manatech, you and I wouldn't get our Ambertos until there was some relief granted through the court system. And they originally scheduled, usually when a TRO is granted, they are required by law to have a hearing on it within 7 days because it could cripple a company, right? You could imagine, right? And it really has had a resounding impact on Vima, though I have some updated information to share with you about what their last year and a half looked like, which I didn't know before. But the idea is that they have a chance to have a hearing in 7 days. There was a request for an extension so Vima could prepare better for the hearing, and so the hearing finally took place on the 15th of September, which was last week, and the judge said he would issue his final statement by Thursday of last week, Thursday or Friday of last week. So we are all waiting, you know, with bated breath to see what the judge would determine, and that's what I want to talk about a little bit today before I get into those 10 steps. And so let's talk about what that, what was that, you know, final decision made from the court and what came out of the court. And I think it was handed down, what was it, the 18th of September. So whatever day that was, the 18th, was Friday. So it did come down just on Friday, the final relief that was given. And what they, or final injunction. And what they agreed to was they agreed to lift the TRO in regard to release of assets. So the final determination in regard to just purely relief to BK Barreco, who's the, you know, the head of Vima. Vima is not a publicly traded company, I believe, right? Is Vima public? I don't think so. No, I think it's owned by, it has shareholders. There are a group of shareholders in there. But it's personally owned by BJ Barreco and a couple other people. And really, I think it's BK, I'm sorry, BK Barreco, sorry, BK Barreco and a couple other shareholders. Anyway, they decided that they would lift the temporary restraining order and put in place a preliminary injunctive relief. So there's now a preliminary injunction against the company. And what that means is, first of all, the company was allowed to it freed up its assets, so Vima is now allowed to continue shipping their products. It can reemploy their employees because their businesses were shuttered. All employees, they wouldn't even let people on premises, so their business was shuttered until the 18th. So what was that, a period of over three and a half, almost 4 weeks? So you can imagine how incredible the impact that would have. Take it, for instance, Manatech, you go a month without your Ambertos. So the judge decided that they would give them relief from the temporary restraining order, allow them to have use of their assets, and they could ship products again, but they're not allowed to sell any new packs, affiliate packs. So in other words, it would be like us being allowed to ship products to people on automatic order or who want orders, but we wouldn't be able to sell any All-Star packs. or associate PACs, even the 169 probably be prohibited, although the structure of VEMA is such that people get involved as affiliates by paying over between $500 and $600. I saw $599 as a classic PAC. I also saw the $500, so I'm not sure of exactly their structure, but it's between $500 and $600 that it costs to become an affiliate. Otherwise, you just opt in as a consumer. And, of course, like most network marketing companies, the majority of people are affiliates. But this company doesn't have an affiliate program that's $100 like we do, or $49. You know, you can become an associate with Manatech at $49. So we really have a real blend of customers, consumers that come in at the associate level, take advantage of the pricing. That's not what's going on at VEMA. VEMA, you know, they really promote highly that people buy the 500 pack to kick off because they're trying to tie it into a money-making endeavor. So that's what they've outlawed, at least until the final adjudication takes place. And that could be a year or two down the road. These things don't happen quickly once the preliminary relief is allowed. And so we'll talk about that as well. But so that's where they are right now in terms of operating. They can sell their products to people, but they cannot sign up new quote-unquote associates, or what they call as affiliate. And the reason the judge granted this injunctive relief for the FTC actually won this, you know, as a hearing. This is a victory for the FTC, although VEMA's trying to paint it as a victory for them. It's a victory for the FTC because this case is going to continue. They didn't drop the case. They found, and the FTC, the judge found that pyramid scheme argument, they found that, yes, in fact, that it's more likely than not that the FTC is going to succeed on the merits of the case, showing that this truly was a pyramid scheme. So the judge made that decision in this current permanent injunction hearing. So there's definitely a statement against VEMA in a huge way, that they basically, you're going to lose. We think there's more than enough evidence to prove it's a pyramid scheme. And then they went through a lot of the reasons why. There's still some things in there that are a little troubling to some of us, and from a network marketing perspective, because they seem to attack like things like automatic order and things like that throughout the event. The one problem that VEMA has that we wouldn't have would be, again, the difference between affiliates that can come in at $49 or $100 that are really just consumers. You know, with VEMA's operation, it's very hard to distinguish those when everybody has to buy in at $500 or $600. So that was a huge distinction from them, and the court wouldn't let them reclassify their affiliates to customers, even though they could argue that the majority of them are customers. The problem being that they all bought in the $500 pack, and when they failed miserably at the business, maybe there are some people that ended up continuing to take the products. So, and we have the same thing that happens. So, you know, some people buy all-star packs and then they try to do the business and either fail to develop a skill set to be effective at it or for whatever reason choose not to do the business, but they never stop taking Ambertose. So I can be sensitive to that issue, but for them, it's like a forced buy-in entry, you know, is the $500. And they went through, again, all the other, you know, issues that we talked about before and that in my prior discussion on it on the Monday, August 31st call. So I'm not going to get into all the different concepts of front-ending and front-loading, you know, inventory loading and all that kind of stuff that they did. And most of the law that they're applying, again, comes from case law, and most of it comes from the Amway case. That seems to be the big one out there. And the other problem was that VEMA didn't have any kind of method of, they had a method, but they weren't enforcing it, of making sure there wasn't a lot of front-end loading going on with people buying packs. They were calling 15 of their 400,000, you know, associates on a monthly basis, and they were failing to even do that. Even the structure that they put in, it's kind of like, well, we're going to throw this structure into how we operate to try to make sure we avoid pyramid scheme status, but then they didn't enforce it. So that was a problem as well. And they reported how many people don't really make money, and Manatech does that as well. You can see our statistics, but that wasn't prolifically found in the Vima documentation because they were really, really aggressive with, you know, promoting income and making tons of money. And the FTC actually even put in there almost a one-third page quote from one of their lead marketers, Alex Morton, this guy who's now over at Jeunesse, that went after all the college kids, and you know, they were even quoting what their people were saying in the field, and again, unbridled, unrestrained by the company or BK Barreco, he was allowing these associates to run wild with their programs, which were deceptive, you know, very deceptive. So, and part of the reason Vima has gotten attacked, as I told you earlier, was they target marketed high schools and colleges. And there were college professors that were sending warning messages out to other chancellors of different colleges. And I mean, it got to be obnoxious what they were doing in terms of these kids. And there was clearly front loading on kids because, you know, they're not buying a 500 pack to consume products in college. They're buying it because they want to be entrepreneurial, and the guy that was kingpin in running that, this Alex Morton guy, was all about the money, taking pictures in front of homes and cars and soliciting people that weren't even their own, you know, and saying this is where you can be, and all about how the money they can make when, you know, less than 1% of the population even came close to that money. So the fraudulent representation, it would be like if you and I went out there and we represented people that they could become Ray Robbins, you know, in the next 2 years or 3 years, and here's Ray's house, and this could be where you are. That's not a good thing to do because there's only one person that's done that. You follow me? In 20 years of Manatech's history. So you don't talk about that. We talk about what is your goal. Let's set your goal for you. I mean, if you want to get to six figures, let's talk about a game plan to get there. But it's up to you what you choose. We're not going to put big houses and all this stuff. And that's one of the things I've never liked about some of the network marketing approaches, when they throw all that stuff, fast cars, big homes, all that stuff. I go, I want to throw up. Because, first of all, it assumes a certain value system. Maybe people don't want fast cars or big homes. And I probably come from my own, you know, pet peeve about that. You know, I when I made a lot of money and still do with Manatech, I didn't go out and buy I still live in the same house I lived in 20 years ago. I buy my husband a new car every 3 years because he drives so often, and I take his hand-me-downs. You know, I'm not into material possessions. I'd rather build, as a lot of you know, build churches in Brazil and have my foundation and do pro bono work, and it gives me the support that I can do what I want. So making a suggestion what people's value systems are has always been kind of offensive. I talk to people about what is in your heart and what's in your goal and what do you want to achieve. I don't make assumptions on everybody wanting, you know, brand new Maseratis. That's not an assumption I would make. And and a lot of the things that Vima were doing were just bad practices. They pointed out some in the final documents from the court, you know, their final judgment that they issued, which again came down last Friday, their order about a permanent injunction against selling PACs and soliciting affiliates, that all they can do is meet consumers' needs until the court case is fully heard. And they talked about many other deceptive practices that included, you know, any income disclaimer they had out there, it would be followed up with, you know, that these results are not typical, but then they'd add a disclaimer saying, but I hope you're not typical. You know, so they were like play off of them because they didn't want it to leave a negative impression to people. Well, it's definitely not what you want the FTC to hear, for sure. So their deceptive trade practices and everything else were clearly outlined. The court found it. They wanted to protect consumers of the product, and they're allowing them to sell. What else did they do? I talked about prohibiting the sale of the PACs, and they put in place a monitor, somebody who's going to be monitoring, a company that's actually going to be monitoring, which the company has to pay, you know, Vima's got to pay for this guy. And the one thing that I found interesting, you know, and there's a whole outline that you can get access to this, it's available, it's a public record, so it's available, about exactly what's in place. But what I found interesting about the Vima case was the fact that the last couple of years, in 2014, VEMA lost $2.2 million. The first half of 2015, they already had a $1.4 million loss that they had incurred in the first 6 months, so they were at a $3 million loss for the pace for this year. I'm sure with the shutdown, it's going to be five times that, okay? So they're going to lose a lot this year. But this is a company, to me, when you look at that information, you see a company that's desperate to try to turn around their operations. And when people get desperate, unbridled, they do desperate things. And they allow their associates to do things that perhaps if everything was going great, you'd be really, really restricting them. You know, you would be crashing down on them and being tough on them and wouldn't allow that kind of that unbridled, you know, excessive sales tactics. But this company was going out. I mean, it was on a very negative downward trend before all this started happening. So I think part of it was probably an impetus to try to get back on track, and they were going to let these people run wild no matter what, and that's what happened. But they're suffering today, and how does it impact us? And because it's really, oh, by the way, and some people ask, well, Mary Jo, weren't they tied into some, you know, sports groups, like professional sports teams? They had an affiliation because they were out of Arizona with the Phoenix Suns. All those teams have discontinued their partnership with VEMA, so they've lost all of that as well. So it's a major impact on that part of their business as well. The impact on us, Manatech, and what's going to look forward, I know that you're going to see some changes that Manatech makes, not tomorrow or not next week, but probably in the next 6 months or so, in terms of, you know, one of the big things they talked about was auto ship, you know, that you have to be on auto ship in order to receive income. I think that's prevalent throughout the entire network marketing industry, so I don't know quite how Manatech's going to handle that, but there'll probably be some major conversations with the DSA about what that looks like for everybody. The concept of these large upfront package purchases upon sign-up, I think Manatech's already controlled a lot of that by allowing people to be associates at all levels, but they'll probably be consumer associate statuses. So in other words, instead of you can become an associate at $49.99, whatever they, I think you'll probably see Manatech rename that, like consumer associate, because they don't mind if you call yourself an associate. Member is a different category. That really has to do with Social Security number, so it really is somebody that doesn't care to even try to offset any of their product purchases. But a consumer could say, you know, I have friends, so maybe I could help get my products for free. That's not an – so we could call you more of a consumer associate than a business builder. So that perhaps is the status they're going to do, new terminology around that to allow people. But we don't – again, I don't know, but I know they'll make changes somewhere in that. They're going to probably put a larger focus on retailing the products, focus on product sales, because that's going to be important. That's a big one that we need to have. They might even have a separate website for customers that doesn't even mention the business opportunity. And so that could be something that Manatech looks forward to. They also talked about, you know, personal giving rewards, more of a setting a bonus process up for personal product sales. So, and we don't have a bonus structure for that because we don't really promote that heavily. So there might be something that's tied to that as well. And then one of the things that wasn't in the lawsuit but came out of the discussions at the court and some of the hearings, which I found out through the news too, was the idea of how fraudulent it was to accept or offer financial contracts for top sales individuals move companies. And I was like, yahoo, I'm glad somebody's doing that. Because a week or so ago, I was approached by somebody, another company that's not doing well right now. Some of you might be familiar with Protandem, and there's a lot of information out there about they're not doing very well at all. But I was approached, as was another associate in my organization, to go out and be flown out to the company headquarters and be wined and dined to move companies. And, you know, as honoring as that might be, it's, to me, it's disgusting. You know, it's I don't like I will not participate in anything of that sort. I know it's done in this industry. I know there are companies out there like a company called Jeunesse that has, a rumor has it, a $60 million slush fund to attract people to come over. In fact, Jeunesse is the company that actually took this Morton guy from Vima, and now he's a Jeunesse associate, and I'm sure he was paid a mighty dollar. They also attracted a presidential director from Manitech down in South Africa, dragged them over. They also took on, of course, Bo Short, and definitely there is plenty of money paid in that regard as well, in positioning, because that's how they attract people. And yes, fraudulent, absolutely. And is it all about money? Absolutely. So those are the kind of things that the court had made comments about, but it didn't come out directly in the document, the final document. But I love to hear that it was discussed as fraudulent, and I think it's one of the things, activities that the Direct Sales Association definitely needs to attack, because it's so egregious. Our world shouldn't be about, you know, recycling associates from one and a trade. It's self-destructive for the network marketing industry. It's for the sake of the industry, we should never do things like that, ever. So anyway, but it's profound what these people do. They get desperate when things get tough. They get desperate, and they start chasing people and doing all sorts of things that aren't very, to me, very ethical, but, you know, it's a taint on our industry, and we need to keep heads up on that and be well aware it exists, but, you know, fight it every moment and definitely make a stand against it. So anyway, so that's where we are. Any questions about any of the Vima issues, where they are, where they're going, what's going on, how it impacts us, anyone? And just keep your eyes open, because Manitech will be there's definitely going to be a Vima response that comes through and kind of, you know, impacts network marketing companies across the board. But I think it'll be done more of on a basis of a decision made, you know, from the Direct Sales Association, kind of transcending, so everybody kind of gets feedback in it. All right, good. All right, super, super. So enough on Vima. And we don't really need to discuss much more of that, because right now that case is going to be going on for the next couple of years. So I think I'm done discussing Vima. And let's go on. Let's talk about our topic then today. Our topic today is about 10 success steps in direct sales. And I thought this was a great topic for a couple of reasons. Is it basic? Yes. Is it something that a lot of us on this call today know and have, you know, down pat? Yes. But there are a lot of brand new people out there, plus you as a leader, a lot of times you might be overlooking some of these steps, and I think it's crucial that you get, you know, back to being part of your panoply of how we do the business, making sure this is enforced at every level in your organization. And that's why it's refreshing to me to go over these things from time to time, because it just gives me a refresher of what maybe there are things that are dropping out of my behavioral patterning, because, you know, we get so caught up in growing as leaders and developing ourselves and all this stuff that sometimes we leave some of the basic tasks behind, and they're crucial for everybody. And, of course, let's just run through them. It won't take us a long time today, because there are 10 of them, and I think I can get through this easily in a half hour. The first one is be a goal setter, and, of course, we all know that. If you're not setting goals, you're losing out. In fact, there was something I talked to Lydia about this weekend. I said, you know what, we need to set some new goals out there. So we're getting a new whiteboard, erasing that one, and we're putting out some new sets of goals out there. We had some that we started off the beginning of the year, and now it's time to revamp and start doing some, you know, shifting on where does that look like, where are we, where are we going. And so I want to be really on top of that, especially right now. What are the goals we should be setting for right now? I think there's two sets of them for all of us in Manitech. Number one, year end. What do I want to accomplish by the end of business period 13? And am I going to win that incentive trip to Cancun? You know, what are my commitments around that? But the other one that's really important to me is the one about manifest as well, because that's a longer-term goal. It's like a six-month goal, seven-month goal. But it's really about how do you want to walk across stage at our next manifest? We got Eric Morey there. I mean, it's going to be a phenomenal event, international, so there are going to be thousands of people there. But the important thing for us is to work with people and say, hey, this is going to be either your first event or your fifth event or whatever. How do you want to be recognized? And make a pinpoint leadership levels that you commit to being at. And today we have so many good ones. Are you going to be at national or senior national? Are you going to be at executive or senior executive? So you can kind of lock those even. I know it's a promotion period right now, but I can almost guarantee you that Manitech is going to implement that on a permanent basis. But it still is a number for us to shoot for. So see what that looks like for you and your organization and get people to commit to not just your end, what's going to be in the short term, which is business period 11, 12, and 13. We only have 12 weeks left after this week till we have year end for 2015. And then we go right into 2016. Wow, what happened to this year? Anyone have that sense about you? I think it's, as we get older, everything goes faster. But, all right, so set your goals, and, you know, the goals, RD, ND, PD, ED, I think what's important to our goal setting is what does it mean to us, the why behind it. In other words, why do I want to be at that goal, right? I mean, what am I going to accomplish by getting to those goals? What does that do for me? I love to look at people and say, okay, so let's get you to regional director, pay for all your products paid for, get to national director. What is, you know, $700,000, $800,000 extra every month? What does that do for you in your life? What difference is that going to make? And most people, when you talk about an extra $800,000 a month, it makes a significant difference in their life. There are things they're going to be able to do that they never could do before. And so when you talk in that language, that's why you want to get them to national director. That's why you want them to be there at national director. So shoot for what that means to you, because that's got to be, they've got to have clarity around that, right? We want a clarity, a vision. People perish without a vision, so get vision to that. And I know last week I think we sent out this 20-question piece that came off the Internet about new creation or something. I said wipe off their name and put on Manitech, and you could use that sheet to look at where all the, or that concept, to each different level that you get to in Manitech and what it means to you. And goals, as I tell everybody, have to be in different areas. I never have people set goals just about what they're going to do in Manitech. What other goals do you have? What do you have in terms of relationship goals? Some of my people have some serious issues going on with their spousal relationship. So if they don't get that hammered out, I don't care how much I teach and train them in Manitech, it's not going to work because they're so stuck in their personal lives. So you want to help with, what do you have on your relationship goals? What about your physical goals? Losing, whether it's losing weight or getting healthier or whatever, whatever that means to you, staying in shape, working out every day, what are your physical goals? What are your spiritual goals? Where's your walk today? You know? Whatever that spirituality means to you, where are you today and where do you really want to be? Where are you committed to growing in that? So all of those, educational could be part of your goals too. Are you going back for more training? Are you going to get some more education? Are you going to make an investment in personal development over the next 12 months? Is that something important to you? Man, it's really top-notch important to me. So it's like, I only grow as much as I grow personally, will I grow in my business? So I know that my investment, and maybe there's a whole stack of books you have sitting up there that Manitech has recommended, you know, whether it's Tom's, I recommend a new book every month in my organization. So whatever that might look to you, whatever that is, where are you in terms of reaching those things? So put those goals down. And as I said in the outline, little if anything is ever accomplished without goals. And we know that by historical data and issues that are out there. Number two, be a list maker. Every night make a list of what you're committed to doing the next day. I love this. This is what drove my business from me being zero getting to presidential director. I did it every night. And every Sunday night, it was crucial. I did a recap. Where was I? What was undone? What needed to be done? And I did it every single night. Every single night. This is something I did, and I'm just telling you, it's invaluable because we have work to be done every day. I get probably on a daily basis, I get 10 to 30 new tasks that need to be done in my Manitech business. And if I don't keep track of those and I don't knock them out and get them done, I'm dead in the water. So it's about, and I know each one's different. It depends on how many people you're working with, how big your organization is, how many new people you have on board, because new people tend to generate a lot of that, right? Because you're still nurturing them, and that's where a lot of the activity comes from. Basically, when you get to people that have been in the business a long time, it's mostly delegation, right? And helping them figure out how to do the things they need to do. But as you you're bringing on new people, there's just a lot of work that's associated with helping them along because they need nurturing. So they could get those lists, make those lists every night, and then you work off the list, check them off. And I put down here, Eat the Frog First. There's a great book out there, right? Is it called? It's Brian Tracy? Eat Your Frog First or something like that. It's hilarious. It's great. And what is it really saying? It's saying, you know, the frogs are the ugly ducklings, or they're the things you least want to do. And he says, put that at the top of your list. Because as long as it's sitting on your list, you're not even going to want to look at your list. So if you knock it out and get it out of your way, now you have fun doing all the rest of the things. So the thing you least want to do is the thing you ought to do first right out of the box. Very true about life. Every single time. When I look at my list and I go, because what is our tendency? We want to leave that out at the bottom. And what happens is it's on your list for the next 6 months because it's always at the bottom. And rarely, if ever, if our lists are substantial, do we necessarily get through with 100% of what's on our list on a daily basis. So eat your frog first. And he said, in regards to this list maker too, always have your notebook listing appointments, contacts, referrals, all that information all the time. I suggest an appointment calendar. I think it's great to have a physical one, but you can do it, you know, on a computer as well. But always have your calendar with you. You always want to have a calendar. Now, of course, with the iPads and the iPhones and everything, you can carry all your data wherever you go. And also a contact manager system, critically important for you to be effective at this business, some kind of contact manager system. And so you can talk to your upline. If you don't have one, find one that works for you. Number three, be enthusiastic. This is critical. Enthuse, remember what that means. It means God within, God in us, enthuse. Enthusiasm is just incredibly critical because it allows us to run with the wind. It gives us high-octane fuel, as I say in the outline. That's what it gives us. And I am one of those people that's very, in fact, when I did my SWOT analysis and I send out to people to give me feedback, One of the strengths a lot of people came back with was how enthusiastic I am, that I always have this unending energy level, and that's true. So it's great because it keeps you going in life. It keeps you excited about what you're doing. It's a blessing to have that. And so, but is it something that's just a natural trait, or can you work on it and build it? You can build it. You build it. It's tied to what part of your body? It's tied to your attitude. What is your attitude? If you're a negative person, you are never going to be enthusiastic. You might be enthusiastic about negativism. I guess I shouldn't say you wouldn't be enthusiastic, but you're never going to be enthusiastic about positive and moving forward. So you got to get rid of negativity out of your life. That's a crucial part of it. Step into the enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is also contagious. It's just like low energy is contagious. If you have low energy, you're going to be in the doldrums, and that's what you're going to attract, and that's what you're going to create in your environment. If you're high energy and enthusiastic, you're going to create that in your environment. So it's contagious. Is there a time when high energy or high enthusiasm isn't going to work for you? Yes. And this is something I had to learn early on in my Manatech career. When I go out and I start meeting with prospects, do not take your excessive enthusiasm with you necessarily. Why do I say that? Because your goal should be to match the energy of the person that you're with. Now, that doesn't mean let them take you if they're a negative view to go negative. It just means if they're a little lower energy person, match their energy. Find them where they're coming from, and that's where they're going to be most comfortable. If you want to have an impact on bringing them forward, that's the approach you want to take. They can see that you have a side of enthusiasm, but it's not how you carry on your conversation. Be with them. You're going to be with them at their energy level, if that makes sense. Very critical to understand that principle. Or you're going to say, wow, that meeting went so awesome. It was incredible. We were just like dynamite on fire, and I don't understand why she didn't sign up. You probably drained the person. They probably were trying to match your enthusiasm, and they just, when they got done, it was like they were exasperated. They were dead because they weren't used to that kind of excessive enthusiasm, and they were like thinking, I can't go into business with that person because they'll kill me, right? Anyway, so you want to be careful with that. But energy and good health are synonymous with busy, happy people, people who are achieving. So when you present yourself in that light, guess what? That's an assumption people make about you. And I guarantee it's true about me because that's what I, that's the kind of the energy and enthusiasm and the positivity that I is pervasive in my life no matter where I go, which is a great thing because it helps you be an attractor factor for people who are interested in achieving what you have. Number four, recognize the magic word in sales is ask. We don't wait for the business to come to us. We need to be asking for it. And it's not about, you know, being pushy. It's about when you get done with a presentation, you say, you're ready to get started. Yeah, John, you said this. Is it really what you want? Great. So let's get started. You've got to take that. You've got to get into the close. So you got to ask for appointments in order to get an STP. You have to ask for the business so that you can eventually close. You got to ask for referrals so you can grow your business. All of these are asks, and you got to become a great asker, right? Number five, expect no's. We always talk about this over and over again, but it's a critical step to success in our direct sales business. You know, are people going to say no? Absolutely. Do you still love them? Absolutely. Honor them? Absolutely. They have a choice. It's their choice. And you might say, but Mary Jo, it's such a lousy choice for them to make. I said, that's not up to you to make. That's why I loved comparing it to leading people to Christ and doing evangelism work. You know what? That's not my job. My job is to share the gospel. My job is to share my faith with people. Holy Spirit comes in and works on their heart. You know, in network marketing, I share this incredible opportunity, but I honor the person's response. Will I help them in any way possible for them to see the results that they can create and what it could mean to them? Absolutely. But it's their decision to make, not mine. So I honor that. And people will honor you for honoring that. Because you don't want it when a person who's convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. Write that down. A person convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. You're going to be fighting that same person over and over and over and over again. And could that person eventually become a great associate? I heard that about Dr. Nugent coming on board with Manatech. Same thing. His upline went over there and visited him like 10 times, demanded, was really pushy, forceful, never let up on it. Finally, Dr. Nugent came and, you know, it was tough. But you got to understand that's an approach you can take. You can pound on the door and beat people down. I don't do that. It's not the approach that I advocate. I advocate, you know, giving them all the information, answering all their questions, getting them to meetings. It's a step-by-step process. Every time they say they're not ready yet, you do the next. You say, great, well, let me help you make a more informed decision. There's a meeting next Tuesday night. How about joining me and going to that? Or how about coming over tomorrow? I have a group meeting at my house. We can just have fun. It's a social arena, so you can just learn more and get to know some other people in the organization. Or how about, so you make the next suggestion. Remember, book a meeting, have a meeting, book a meeting, have a meeting, book a meeting. I call it ham-bam, have a meeting, book a meeting. So you just keep taking them forward. So, but we will get no's. We know that they're going to come, but we just continue to try to help people see the brighter side, see the what the benefits are to them so that they can take it to another level. A no usually doesn't mean no. It just means they don't know enough or not now. So don't ever remember what's my rule about taking people off your contact list? Only two ways you can take them off. Number one, they die because you don't want to be marketing the morgue. Or number two, they say yes, and they become an associate. Other than that, they stay on your list, contact list, because they may say no today, but they may say yes tomorrow. So you just timing wasn't right. Remember the whole concept of the looking zone. Number six is schedule your time wisely. Your schedule of your time is your roadmap. Like right now, I'm staring at Monday, September 21st. Here's my roadmap for my day, and attached to my roadmap, the next three pages are a list of all my to-dos, right? Does that mean I'm going to get them all done today? No. But I've got three pages of, Lydia said, yes, you are going to get those done today. She's got the whip out. But, you know, it's our to-do list, things that need to get done and tackled. So that's what I've attached to it. So, but I've got my list of all my contacts, what's going to happen today, my time. And then I know what I fill in my empty slots with because I have my to-do list attached to it. So a schedule is your roadmap. Being structured in that way is going to build your greatest level of effectiveness in this business and in life. It's a great thing to do in every aspect of your life, but you want to have that done. You want to use high leverage activities. right? That's what makes the difference in your business. Are you out there prospecting, contacting new people? Who are you getting that's new in your business? Who are you connecting with today? Every day, you ought to be doing that, every day. High leverage activities. What creates results? If you question what are high leverage activities, just go to Mana Tracker, right? Go on your Mana Tracker list, and that'll tell you why are they asking you to report on all those activities on the Mana Tracker, because those are your high leverage activities. That's what produces results in your business. So plan your work and work your plan, right? Scheduling your time wisely. 7, be positive in your attitude. This is hugely important. And in this article, they said success in this business is 90% attitude, 10% aptitude. I'm not going to tell you I totally agree with that, because I think skill sets, I think when you first get started, having a great attitude is really important, that you fall in love with your industry. But skill sets are critically important, because it's going to increase your results you create. So that's why you want to dedicate time. So aptitude is highly critical in that early stages. First 6 to 12 months, that person should be developing the greatest level of aptitude in terms of your core skill sets. You know, contact list, contact invite, presentation, follow up, and close. If you don't have those down, and there are plenty of you on the call today, I know, that don't have those down yet, dedicate time and energy to really learn those. Read the books about them. Look on the internet and get trainings from other people. There's plenty of training out there. Talk to your upline. Get it down pat. What am I doing today? What can I do better? Because every ounce of improvement you have in those areas is going to catapult. It's like a multiplier of your effectiveness in your business and how you grow your business. So get those core skills down. There's a reason we teach those every single monthly training we have, as is done in South Africa. Okay, so aptitude is important, but I think beyond that, getting that skill set done, no question about it, attitude is tremendously important. And remember, there's that saying out there, your attitude will predict your altitude, right? Your altitude is dependent on your attitude. You hear that. Develop habits of constructive thinking. In regard to that, let me give you another suggestion. I don't know if I made this last week, but I'm putting my entire organization on this tonight on my team call. And I think I talked to you guys about watching Earl Nightingale on the internet. Just look him up and on YouTube, and there's a great YouTube out there with Earl Nightingale. And that YouTube piece is like 30 minutes or something that you can listen to him. It's awesome. It's all about the number one secret, the most incredible secret there is out there, which is, you know, a man is as we think is, so are we. I mean, that's what he talks about. He does a great job in that, and I'd never heard it before until a few weeks back. And when I listened to it, I mean, some of you probably have listened to it 20 times, but I love it. In fact, I'd love to have people listen to it every single day for a period of 30 days, because I think it would have a major conversion in your life. You know, we keep wondering, how do we change habits in our life? Well, repetitive introduction of positive information is what helps you change and shift. And his is wonderful. But he also has what's called a 30-day test that he put out there. And I love it. So I'm implementing that in my organization tonight in our team call. We're going to do the 30-day test. And it's a great little test, and you have a little card that you have, 3x5 index card you carry around with you all the time. So I challenge all of you on this call to go in there and look that up and perhaps implement it in your own organization with your own team as well. And it talks about developing habits of constructive thinking, because one of the things in the test, which I really love, that 30-day test, is that, you know, you need that every time you come up with a fear, replace it with a positive thought. You know, we're going to stay optimistic. Every day, think of optimism. It's each day, think of optimism. So we're going to be positive about everything that comes in our life. If you let a negative thought enter your mind and you don't replace it, then guess what happens? You have to start all over again, day one, 30-day test. So you haven't accomplished it yet. So isn't this a beautiful thing? So I don't know how long your 30-day test might take. Some of you, it might take 3 months. Some of it might take 3 years. Some of you may do this in 30 days. Everybody's different. But understand, when you hit a negative thought enters your mind and you don't replace it, you have to start all over again. It becomes day one. So it's really a great challenge. So I'm just suggesting everybody take that on. And some people will say to me, well, Mary Jo, I'm not a very negative person. I said, so you don't have any negative thoughts? And they go, well, I don't know if I could say that. Take the test. See what happens. Because some of us are in denial about what we think about. We're in denial. And that's what's holding us back. Because when you stand in denial, what is holding you back? That you're not standing in reality. You're standing in denial. You're not choosing your life the way you want it. You're allowing other factors to choose it for you. I love it. One of my people in my organization this morning on a call, she said, I can't even watch TV. My husband wants to watch TV. I said, I'm not going to watch that. That's just all garbage stuff. So she sits down. She grabs her Bible or positive, a book I sent her, and she just loves. She's just done with all of that life. She's done with the negativity and the negative stuff. And, oh, my gosh, our world is in such terrible shape. I think our world's in terrific shape. I mean, people are so funny today. They look at the United States and they talk about how terrible, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, are you kidding me? Let me give you the book on the fall of Rome. Like, you didn't think this kind of stuff happened before? You don't think this is just part of human culture because it's part of humanity? It's what we're made of. No one else came and impacted this country except human beings. The greed, the Monsanto, all this stuff going on. Guess what? That's all created by human beings. There's no other kind of concept going on around us. That's called human beings, right? And the way we shift that is by us having better judgment, us being positive, optimistic, us being delightful in our approach, us being honest, showing highest integrity, and that's how we defeat that. The energy from the positive force becomes so much greater than the negative force. That's how we defeat it. That's how each one of us individually can make a difference in this world. And that's why we want to take this test, this Earl Nightingale test, and become that positive thinker. Right? Let's keep the negativity off. All right. Okay, have an office area. I always tell people, absolute critical. If you don't have a dedicated office area, and does it have to be a complete office with a door on it? I'm suggesting not, because some of you don't have the capacity to do that. You don't live in a house that gives you that freedom, or your apartment doesn't give you that freedom, whatever it is. But find an area that you can lock off, and maybe even get one of those little dividers that you can set up. You know, a screen that you can just, so it's blocked off. But have a dedicated office area, because it's going to absolutely, totally change how efficient you are at this business when you have a dedicated office area. It happened to me when I was throwing pieces of paper everywhere. That didn't work at all. So I needed a desk, and I needed a lamp, and I needed a computer stand. I needed shelving. I needed a file cabinet. Guess what? Boom, there goes the business. Give dignity to your business, and it'll respond, right? Your business is only going to grow as big as you allow it to grow, and that's part of giving it space in your life. And obviously, there's critical record keeping that needs to be done in any business. Number 9, be involved. In other words, be actively involved when Manatech has contests or regionals or conventions. You show up. You want to win contests. It's one of the reasons I've won every single incentive that Manatech ever had, because if I don't win it, what standard am I setting for the rest of my organization? Not a very good one, right? So I go after it with full gusto because I want to be present. I want to be there. I want to let everybody know every one of these contests is totally doable. We just need to step into it and make it happen. And I attend all conventions. I'm always showing up. Why? Because I learn so much, and I get to interact with all my downline that comes to town and love on them and care about them. So I'm always showing up. Every convention, be there. They're enlightening. They're incredibly tremendous amount of growth occurs with these things. You get to interact with lots of other upline and crossline people that are really you don't get to see very often. So you want to always be involved. Always show up. 10, learn to manage money intelligently. I love this one. I love this one. Because this is the one I think that's so critical for network marketers. Because as you get to presidential and beyond, you're going to start making money that a lot of you have never seen in your life. And what happens is you buy things that you can't afford. You get lost in the different spaces. And all of a sudden, something happens with the company or something happens in your business, and you're going into bankruptcy. Because you didn't manage your money right. You want to always manage your money. And you start learning techniques in money management by starting when you're not even a regional director. When you first start getting those little bitty checks, you start putting them in a bank account. You have a set-aside inspector separate bank account. You track your income. You track your expenses. You take care of those things. That's the base core part of your business that you want to make sure to manage wisely. Invest it wisely, and I love the 10% save. Every single check, 10% set aside, set aside, set aside. And what do you do with that 10%? Nothing ever. It's always set aside. 10% tithe, 10% save, and then you can decide what you want to do with the rest. But you always want to set aside 10%, and it'll be amazing what that creates for you. and then you'll have the opportunity to do something greater with it, like leverage with real estate or do other things with it as it grows. But it's just a great tool to teach you that, you know, we are a pleasure-seeking society that doesn't want to say no to anything. We want everything now. That's why people are in such devastating situations with credit cards, everything else, because we can't say no. Well, that's a choice. I know that's how our society, but why do we have to be dictated to by society's standards? No reason. We just do. We fall into entrapment, and we blame it and point our finger at society. I don't point my finger at anything. Whatever I create in my life is my responsibility because I'm capable of making my own decisions, and that's how you need to stand up strong in that yourself. So learn to manage money. Hopefully these 10 help you guys. I love them. I think that they should be part of your course structure and set up and teach all your new people. Great call to pass on to your new people as well so they get it, how important all these are. But do try to, you know, that there's plenty of tools out there to support you in all of these 10 areas, but I do love that Earl Nightingale piece. I think it's just a great way to build that positive mental thought process, goal setting, directional in your life, and do it for 30 days. Because we know what? You want to change habits, how long does it take to change a habit? Some people can change a habit at the drop of a hat. You have high emotional involvement in it, people, you can see their lives change 5 seconds. But most of us, it takes 4 to 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, whatever. And so that's what he's doing. He's saying, hey, to help you shift, here's a 30-day test. And if you don't, if you fall off the wagon, it gets you start over your 30 days again. I love that. So see if you can tackle that one as well. Pass it on to your organization and enjoy. Just have a joy with it. Okay, everybody, that's all I got for this morning. Any last-minute questions? Comments? Are we all great? Yoo-hoo! And by the way, everybody, whatever your mechanism of lifting people up in prayer or whatever you want to do, hold them up in light, whatever it is for you, because I know not everybody's a Christian out there, but we got some big, important strategic meetings coming up over the next week with corporate officers. We also have the NAC, our North American Advisory Council, coming into town in Dallas next week, and I just think that putting energy behind that, lifting them up with energy and prayer, whatever that is to you, it's great for us to do that because it's an important time for Manatech as a company. You know, we have a brand new CEO, and he's terrific. I mean, that's who I met with on Saturday afternoon at corporate. He goes, Mary Jo, how about Saturday afternoon? I go, it's okay with me. That works, you know. So we're over at corporate headquarters with Al on Saturday afternoon. What a great blessing that he's so open to give of his time in such an incredible way. It's just, I'm looking forward to see what comes out of all of these sessions. I think Manatech's on a great, you know, a great track, and I'm very, very excited about the future. But let's keep them all in prayer, lift them up, or whatever it means, send energy in their direction, whatever that is for you as they go through this next couple of weeks of strategy sessions, both corporate, you know, board of directors-wise, corporate-wise, and NAC meetings. They all need us to be supporting them. So thank you, guys, and don't forget, next Monday, we're having a call live from New York City. Okay, see y'all. Bye, everybody.